This episode is part of the 2017 Ann Arbor District Library Summer Game and has clues embedded in it that can be used to win points and glory in the Summer Game. Just listen for the special sound effect at certain points in this episode and go to play.aadl.org and follow the instructions on how to use this knowledge for personal gain. You certainly don't have to play the game in order to enjoy this episode. This is Ann Arbor Stories. I'm Rich Reddy. If you were a student at the University of Michigan, a faculty member, maybe a janitor, or a regular townie, someone visiting from out of state, or perish the thought, a kid, a delicious little snack of a kid. If you were any of those things from 1929 to 1962, and you found yourself on campus near where Geddes and Washington Avenue meet today, there's a chance you were in imminent danger, and you didn't even know it. Watched with predatory eyes. Bears, bobcats, badgers, red foxes, raccoons, porcupines eat people, I swear. Otters, like really mean otters. And the most savage animal of them all, the Wolverine. Their territory at the corner near Geddes and Washtenaw, what in the summer of 2017 is the back of the U of M Museum of Natural History and its parking lot. There, these wild beasts stalked their campus prey for more than 30 years. Okay, stalked is a little hyperbolic. Watched. But watched with slavering mouths and sharp, curved teeth. Mouths and teeth that would sometimes take the food right out of your hands if they were hungry and you held tasty treats up to the chain link fence surrounding their cages. I didn't mention the cages. There were cages and some fences and zookeepers. Wait, I didn't mention everyone. We had a zoo. From 1929 to 1962 at the corner I geolocated for you twice already, the University of Michigan had an honest-to-goodness zoo. A gift of a bunch of animals native to the state of Michigan and a financial appropriation from the U of M Regents built an octagonal paddock 40 feet in diameter, about the length of a school bus. They split the footprint into six equal enclosures and put a structure in the middle to store food and supplies. The pens were ringed with regular chain link fence, then a gravel track around the outside, about 5 feet wide, separated the cages from a second set of regular chain link fence. Most people stood at the outer chain link fence, but there are pictures of patrons touching the animals through the holes in the fence of the inner cage. It was in Fort Knox. This was the 1930s. They called it the Museum Zoological Park, dubbed the Animal House by locals. It was staffed by grad students and a few full-time zookeepers. The hope was that the animals could be enjoyed by sick kids staying at the hospital across the street, as well as locals, students, etc. It opened with those first few animals, raccoons, foxes, badgers, porcupines, and skunks, and it was an instant hit, leading to the construction of a companion reptile pit with a shallow pool and running water, which featured 9 species of turtle and 7 species of snake native to Michigan. Over the seasons, animals moved to other facilities, replaced by new specimens or different creatures entirely. They had the aforementioned raccoons and foxes, badgers, porcupines, and skunks, but also coyotes, possums, a bobcat, 2 otters purchased from the Detroit Zoo for $350 each, and the zoo's main attractions, bears and a wolverine. The first bears to be part of the Animal House were a pair of black bear cubs found by the Department of Conservation when they were less than 4 weeks old. They were sent to the U of M Zoo in 1933, weighing less than 2 pounds each. Their eyes hadn't opened yet. The cubs were kept warm inside the zoo's tiny center building, protected from Ann Arbor's February chill, nursed on 6-ounce bottles and taking 4-hour naps throughout the day until they got big and strong enough to go outside. Their names were Brother and Sister, the featured attraction of the zoo. They put their paws up on the chain link fence surrounding their enclosure when people walked by, swaying their heads and licking their big bear lips. Imagine being only a few feet from a pair of giant bears anytime you wanted. Brother and Sister lived into their 20s before health issues became a problem. By 1955, Sister had severe arthritis and worsening lung problems and had to be euthanized by the zoo. The death was a shock to Brother, partly because of how the zoo carried out their plan. They euthanized sister in the cage with brother, then dragged her out of the enclosure while keeping him at bay, loaded her into a reindeer truck, and drove off. For days, brother raised his nose and sniffed the air anytime a vehicle drove by, trying to locate his cellmate. Brother moped around for weeks. To cheer him up, the zoo obtained a 2.5-year-old bear named Toodles in 1955, which reinvigorated brother, who started setting ground rules immediately. Brother ate first, got his choice of where he slept in the cage. Normal bear dominance stuff. Brother was the more laid-back bear, according to zookeepers. He never gave anyone trouble. Toodles, on the other hand, there's a throwaway line in a newspaper report where they write about Toodles gashing or biting a kid visiting the zoo, though it's hand-waved in the article. Yes, Toodles drew blood from a young patron, but quote, some older kids had been teasing the bears all afternoon when they dared the youngster to get close to the cage. In 1957, Bear and Toodles were shipped to a different zoo where they would be part of a geriatric study of bears. In exchange, the Animal House got two new bear cubs, courtesy of the Department of Conservation. These cubs had been stolen from the woods by poachers looking to sell them. The poachers were arrested, and the cubs confiscated by the authorities. These black bears were shipped to Ann Arbor, where the zoo held a contest to name the new arrivals. 13-year-old William A. Close Jr. of 1414 East Park Place, because of course the newspaper published the addresses of 13-year-olds in the 1950s, he won, coming up with the better names than more than 130 other entrants. For his incredibly original names, he won a book. Yes, a book about mammals in the Great Lakes. The names he suggested, you're never gonna guess these. Maize for the female cub and Blue for the male. William A. Close Jr. and the rest of Ann Arbor in 1957 were better than that. Meanwhile, the zoo continued to stock itself with cool attractions year after year. In 1958, they added a pair of $350 otters and built them a little water slide and a pool. The bobcat came in 1952, and the zoo's Wolverine. It's an interesting tale that starts in 1923 with Michigan football coach Fielding Yost. Yost had one simple request. Find me a Wolverine. Yost saw the University of Wisconsin bring a caged badger onto the field at one of its games, and he had to have his own live mascot. So he wrote letters to 68 trappers throughout the state, offering a bounty if they'd bring a Wolverine to Ann Arbor. 68 bounties went unclaimed. Michigan Senator William Alden Smith summoned Yost to Lansing to check out a stuffed Wolverine he had. But when Yost arrived, he scoffed at the senator and his stuffed coyote. Yost changed the terms of his deal with the trappers, this time involving hunters as well. One Wolverine delivered to Ann Arbor, dead or alive. Price is no object. Still, no Wolverines were found, shot, or captured. Feeling bad for Michigan's coach, the Hudson Bay Fur Company sent him a stuffed Wolverine in 1924 to dull his Wolverine lust. But Yost still pined for the real thing. Fast forward to 1927. When Yost's dreams came true, the Detroit Zoo obtained 10 Wolverines from the state of Alaska in exchange for who knows how much treasure. Two of the specimens, nicknamed Benny and Biff, were loaded into a cage and carried onto the field by four attendants at Michigan Stadium's dedication game on October 22, 1927, against Ohio State. More than 85,000 people roared as Benny and Biff were carried onto the field, and Benny and Biff freaked out. All the cheering and noise freaked them out, and they scrambled around their cages nervously. The Wolverines were really vicious, taking regular swipes at their handlers nearby. It wasn't the best idea. Yost wasn't even the football coach in 1927, serving as athletic director instead, which is maybe why he had a new perspective on his obsession with bringing live dangerous beasts onto the field in front of tens of thousands of screaming people and bands and whistles and all that. Quote, it was obvious that Michigan mascots had designs on the Michigan men toting them, and those designs were by no means friendly. It's unclear exactly how long the experiment went on. Most accounts say the Wolverines were trotted out for big games for a few years before the practice was retired. Some accounts say the Wolverines were housed in the U of M Zoo between games, but we found no evidence of that. Regardless, the experiment was called off shortly after it started. The first evidence of a Wolverine at the Animal House is in 1936, when either the Chevrolet Motor Company, a prestigious alum, or a prestigious alum working at the Chevrolet Motor Company, donated a Wolverine to the zoo. Like the zoo was wont to do, they held a naming contest for the new arrival, and the winning suggestion was Intrepidus. Treppy for short. There's a rumor that Treppy was brought onto the field at Michigan Stadium for one game, but freaked out and was never brought into the stadium again. That sounds about right. He was apparently a big baby, and would often take food right out of the hands of his keepers. Treppy was the oldest captive Wolverine when he died in his enclosure in May 1950. He'd spent 14 years at the zoo and lived for who knows how long in the Alaskan wilderness prior to that. He was never replaced with another Wolverine because, seriously, did you hear that whole bit about Yost's obsession? Also, Wolverines are really hard to find in Michigan. And now to the fate of the zoo itself. Just 9 years after the zoo opened, with the town in love with its new addition, the city nearly executed an ambitious and kind of insane plan to create a 40-acre zoological garden near the U of M Hospital in Huron River. It would be a wildlife utopia where animals native to the state would roam free, kept semi-contained by moats, water features, rocky precipices, the things I'm totally confident would have kept the wolves from devouring the beavers and buffered the bobcats and the coyotes so they wouldn't battle for territory while some patient way up in the hospital watched the battle unfold below. With a possible grant from World Animal Protection, planners even engaged architects to sculpt what the habitat might look like, complete with a giant bear mound. Otters and beavers and muskrats would be turned loose on sections of the Huron to build dams and habitats for themselves. There's no way it wouldn't end in some Jurassic Park raptor-level shenanigans. We never got a chance to find out. The grant never came through, and cooler heads didn't have to prevail. The zoo was ultimately doomed as well. We kind of glossed over the part about the zoo's dimensions and just how small the enclosures were. Close your eyes and imagine a school bus doing a 360-degree donut in a parking lot. Pretty sweet, huh? Okay, now picture that same school bus and that same donut, but the outline of that donut represents the entire footprint of the zoo. Now divide that into six pie pieces and put a building in the middle, then two bears in one of those pie pieces, two foxes in another, a Wolverine in the third, side by side by side, no spacing. These were tight quarters, even for the 1930s, when people didn't know any better. By the 1960s, calls to renovate or relocate the zoo were common. When the museum decided to undertake a $1.2 million renovation in 1962, it was time for the zoo to go. The city lobbied the regents to relocate the zoo somewhere else on campus, but the regents declined to entertain the matter. Ann Arbor City Council tried next, debating a measure on the November ballot to raise $300,000 from a five-year city millage for the cost to build and maintain the zoo. They decided there wasn't enough public interest in the vote, and the measure never went to the public. The animals at the zoo were either given away or destroyed. Hundreds of letters poured in from 38 states asking to adopt Ann Arbor's animals. Like little Betsy Doherty of Huntington, West Virginia, who wrote, quote, "How are you? I am good. I saw in Mama's paper about how you are giving away animals. Would you please send me a skunk? Mama says okay. Thank you." Based on the requests they received, the zoo estimated it could have provided homes for 165 skunks, 177 turtles, 91 raccoons, 43 foxes, and 18 bears. But the zoo was only looking to relocate animals to commercial or university facilities, not private owners. Maize and Blue were given to a much larger zoo with more room in Athens, Michigan, just south of Battle Creek. It took the zookeepers a few tries to coax the bears out of their cages and into crates for the trip, but they were finally shipped to their new homes, where they were renamed Dokamok and Athena. A year after the move, the bear, formerly known as Maize, had cubs. The zoo in Athens had, you guessed it, a contest to name the new little bears. Ann Arbor Stories is presented by Rumbleback Media in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library. This episode was written and read by me, Rich Reddy, with sound and audio engineering by Brian Peters. Thanks to the AADL and their archive staff, who day in and day out digitize old newspaper clippings and photos from Ann Arbor's past. Visit oldnews.aadl.org and take a look around. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Ann Arbor Stories, or email us at annarborstories@gmail.com and ask us questions about Ann Arbor's past or tell us how we're doing. Thanks for listening.